Box Thorn, African Box Thorn was declared a weed of national significance in 2012, and Weeds of National Significance program, it was initiated about 1999, and then coordinators came on in about 2003. Gorse has been something that Tasmania has run for Australia, and in about 2011 it was determined that what we'd set out to do with the Gorse Task Force and the national initiatives had been largely achieved, I think about 85% achieved, and we took African Box Thorn as the Tasmanian-led weed for Australia.
African Box Thorn is what sort of weed?
It's actually one of the, if not the most widespread weeds in Australia, I would venture to say. It's a major weed issue for Australia and New Zealand alone, and it hasn't become a major weed in other parts of the world is quite interesting. Gorse is across the globe. It's a weed worldwide. Whether you go to the west coast of the US or even through Europe, they're dealing with gorse. With African box thorn, it was deliberately introduced to Australia from southern Africa and deliberately introduced as a hedgerow plant and a windbreak to some extent, and also to New Zealand. And they're the two places where it's a serious weed. The rest of the world, African box thorn is not really known as a weed. It's declared in the United States and some other places, but only because of our experience with it and what it's done here.
And what makes it a serious weed? Is it its ability to spread? Is it its persistence in environments? Is it how much ground it takes over? Why box thorn?
Well, it's a serious weed from both a agricultural and production land and environmental perspective. It invades and takes over large areas of particularly grazing land. It can exclude stock from water sources and shade because it tends to grow under trees and around waterways. Also, it harbours quite a lot of pests from a horticultural perspective. It harbours fruit fly, common house fly, and potentially the potato tomato psyllid, which is a major biosecurity threat to Australia. But
yeah, we haven't got it, but New Zealand certainly has got both box thorn and the psyllid.
Yes, yeah, that's right. New Zealand is finding that the psyllid, which is, I think is a relatively recent arrival there, is actually overwintering on box thorn. So that's a concern for us where we've got potatoes, tomatoes or related crops. If we do happen to get that psyllid into the country, then box thorn will harbour that psyllid. So keeping a close eye on that. To answer the rest of your question, from an environmental perspective, it's a huge environmental weed, particularly on coastlines and islands, but also in inland areas right through to the semi-arid zone. It loves Australia because I guess our climate and environment is similar to southern Africa, probably much better for it actually. So it ensnares birds on coastal areas. The mutton birds or shearwaters become ensnared in it and they can't escape, so it's often fatally ensnaring them. South Australia and Western Australia, it's growing right down to the top of the beaches on the islands where the seals and sea lions are pupping, and the sea lions have difficulty accessing the areas that they go for pupping. And with the seals, box thorn is actually pushing aside the native vegetation, which traditionally has provided cover for the seal pups from predators, and so it's degrading their habitat, making them more vulnerable to being taken by predators. And it has great capacity to push aside native vegetation and outcompete it. I guess it's so suited to our environment as well.
I've seen examples of it. Lonely, single, isolated plants in the middle of paddocks that have been browsed around the edges, but also huge thickets, 5 or 6 metres tall.
Yes, particularly inland, it can grow to that height, 5 or 6 metres, and equivalent width. On the coastal strips, it tends to be wind-pruned, so it looks quite different. And it grows smaller, but in a wind-pruned direction, so wider, I guess. It's also a tricky weed because unlike something like gorse that bursts out in yellow flowers and becomes very obvious, African box thorn integrates quite well visually to our native vegetation. So you can drive along somewhere like Lillicoe Strait in the north between Devonport and Ulverston. When I point out to people that African box thorn's right through there, people don't see it because it looks like a native.
They think it's tucked in amongst the boobiellas.
Yes, yeah.
So if it's as widely distributed from the arid areas through to the northwest coast of Tasmania, what about control methods? Is it one size fits all or a whole cross-section of solutions?
Well, that's a good question because it's really how it's been managed to date across Australia in different ways and with different initiatives from different places. And the great thing about a national project is we actually pull all those people's experiences and thinking together and look at what is working the best and what initiatives there are. So, for example, in South Australia, an engineering firm have come up with a product called a box thorn puller, which you put on the front of a machine and it hydraulically clamps onto the base of the box thorn and physically just rips it out. And when you're dealing with large-scale box thorn, that's quite a useful tool, and particularly because handling box thorn, it's got large thorns on it, and people can become quite injured from those thorns. Other experiences are groups like the Friends of Bass Strait Islands, who've been working on box thorn for over a decade on the Furneaux group of islands, and have achieved great outcomes just through their passion for getting rid of the stuff, where they've achieved eradications on small islands, which is, as far as I'm aware, pretty much a first for certainly Australia. And it really comes down to what they do, not initially, but later down the track when they come back again in the boat, they drop off of that island after 18 months and they see what's happening. If there's regrowth, they treat that regrowth. They come back again in 2 years and check what's happening until finally there's nothing left. It's those steps and that commitment, maybe 10 years before they eradicate it, but they're so committed, they're actually achieving it.
And with the islands, is eradication possible because you don't get as ready reinfestation, or is that not part of it at all?
That is a significant part. Box thorn is spread sort of 95% by seed, 20 to 70 seeds in each of its fruits, which are very palatable to particularly bird species and particularly things like starlings and currawongs. So what they're finding with the Bass Strait Islands is that they're typically a native grassland type island. At some stage, a bird has come along and deposited the box thorn bush. That then creates a woody, thorny habitat, which starlings love in particular. And once you've got box thorn, you've got starlings, and it sort of perpetuates, I suppose. So it's almost a mutualistic relationship, and you have to remove the box thorn, including the dead debris of the plant, so burning it to get rid of it. And that way you get rid of the starlings, which otherwise would return the box thorn. And it's very interesting also in Western Australia, where they've managed, to their great credit, to keep starlings out of the state, and the box thorn is not doing as well in that state. And we've got a strong feeling that it's because it hasn't got its partner in the starling present. So hopefully Western Australia continue to keep the starlings out, and if they can continue to work on box thorn as well, then they'll probably have more success than other parts of Australia that have starlings.